On this week's show, can you leave the noise behind and get back to building with Lou Perez from Lumber? In this week's news, are you ready for AI washing? You better be.
Construction is the world's oldest industry but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right. Nathan Wood, good to see you, my friend. How are you?
Oh, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling energized. I'm feeling ready for podcast discussions. It's been a couple weeks for us, I think.
Yeah, it has been a few weeks, and I'm excited because we got a fellow podcaster with us, Lou Perez. Lou, how are you, man?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, I'm rocking a new haircut from my wife, so feeling a little confident with the look, and she's awesome. So she got me prepped and ready for this video podcast that we're on right now.
That's awesome, right? Like, we always send this out to the other guests that want to come on. Like, Lou showed up. He's like, I got a fresh haircut. I'm ready to go. I'm like, that's style, man. That's showing the commitment to the show. So we're excited to have you. We're going to get into the meat of this in a second, and we'll be right back. Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontechcrew.com to learn more. All right, so Lou, I met you. We connected, called me from I think you were in a lobby somewhere, and I was blown away at the first thing. I was showing you some of the pictures on the walls, and you, sir, started. Your goal in life was not where you are today.
No.
Let everybody know what your goal was in life.
Man, I just wanted to live in the mountains and snowboard, and that's it. Have some fresh powder under my feet every week and go compete, try to win some gold medals, make it to the Olympics. And that was the ultimate goal of my dreams.
And it was at a pretty crazy time. So you did go pro, right?
Yeah, I did go pro. And you know, the time, the era that I was in, it was like competing. I feel sorry for all those guys that started playing basketball and then realized, oh man, there's a Michael Jordan here. So that was the circumstances that I was in with Sean White. Not only Sean White, but there was other ones like Danny Cass and JJ Thomas. Those guys were absolutely phenomenal. So getting first, second, and third was a crazy battle at every competition that I was in. So yeah, but of course, did I try? Absolutely. Absolutely. I was fearless and driven. Did I win a few? Actually, I did. I was actually beat him a few times. But as far as like Sean White goes, no, nobody beat Sean White. He was the best.
Yeah, everybody was fighting for second and third place. Then Danny came around. So, you know, Nathan, you got to love this, right?
Another nobody diehard. Competes. The Flying Tomato, I mean, that guy is so much fun to watch. I mean, Michael Phelps, whatever. So yeah, the greatest of their industry. So no, it was cool. It's cool you got to compete against him. That's crazy.
Yeah, he's such a good guy. Like, it's funny, you see me now and I laugh about, I get my hair cut and stuff like that. I actually joke about it because my hair actually used to be down to my shoulders back then. And like, yeah, so total typical snowboarder. I got hilarious pictures of me and Sean White signing autographs together and stuff at actual competitions on tour. And like, yeah, the difference from then and now is pretty funny.
It is kind of cool that you're not the only one to walk this path. I got to give a shout, Nathan, to one of our boys we've ridden with before, but Jason Barber, if you're listening in, man, he was a pro too, probably predated you a little bit. Nathan and I have tried to keep up with them. I have been living in the mountains for 30 years and he's one of the only guys I've ever come across that I cannot keep up with. So we're going to have to test you out at some point.
Bring me on. Yeah, let's do it.
We'll get you out here in our mountains and see what's going on. But we got to dive in because obviously didn't work out. To be honest, like there's only a few of them that actually go that route. So you found a fallback, something to take you to. So where'd you go from that?
Yeah. And so I actually ended up coming back. I'm like, man, I need to make some money. So like, what is some quick cash? What is some good cash? So I actually went straight into the trades and became a carpenter. Actually, I was really happy as a carpenter. I really enjoyed it. Moved my way up, went from, you know, being at the top of the roof, bringing down the trusses, being the only one that would stand up at three stories high, because I was the crazy one on the crew. But then, you know, worked my way up to that project manager level, really got to know, got a good love for carpentry in itself. I mean, the guy that took me under his wing, the owner of the company, Arbutus Builders out in Antioch, Illinois. I mean, that guy taught me so much from beginning to end. It was like going to college, and you didn't have to go to college. It was all on the job training. And the guy taught me so much stuff that I still, to this day, have that like urge to go outside and chop wood and like try to make chairs and stuff. I actually just made a playground for my daughter, and like just that whole like experience was life changing. And it's like a love that has sat in my heart like ever since I even did it from day one. Definitely. Heavy duty work. Like, it's not easy, but even that part stayed with me. Like, you wake up way early before the sun rises, you're out there plugging in all the machines and getting all the saws ready, the circular saws ready. And then right when that time hits, man, it's the sound is loud, the generators are going, you just smell wood cooking. And that's pretty much it, man. There's nothing like it. And it stays with you. So like, that was where my fallback was. And, you know, I did that for quite a bit of time before I ended up actually getting into the tech world and, you know, trying to see if I have an knack for learning about tech and what I can do in the technology world. Yeah, it was a really like crazy change from carpentry to there.
That's really cool. I mean, Nathan, we hear the stories of people that find the trades and find the values and find the connection to the industry. It's different for everybody, but you know, Lou, you found it. It's pretty cool. I'm sure a couple of our carpenters out there are listening and they're like, oh, the smell of wood. He knows what he's talking about. He's up on the trusses. You know, at what point in time though drove you to want to try the technology side? I mean, the thrill seeker in you had sort of been satiated. So what did you want to do on the technology side? Why?
Man, it's honestly, it's interesting because when I was doing it, we did a lot of manual processes. I mean, there was parts of the job where, you know, they would have to come up, tell me the times, or we were taking everything down on spreadsheets, pieces of paper. And then we had to get that information to the lady in the back office some way, either call. I mean, honestly, we would call in times like, hey, this guy was here, this guy was there, this is how many hours they are. That was our way of approval and getting it in that. And it was time consuming because it took us away from the job. Like we could have probably focused on more things throughout the day than getting data from the field to the back office. And that's something that really I thought about for a long time, up until I met the other founders, where we started collaborating and realized, hey, this is a problem that we can actually solve.
Yeah. Like, how many times has an 8 been a 0 because it got smudged on that time card or, you know, under the seat? Time of my favorite one was, you know, like what's the final invoicing cycle? It's when I take the truck back and clean it out at the end and find all the T&Ms and other things that were shoved under the seat. Nathan, I'm interested. What do you got for Lou?
I think that so much of what you're explaining is what makes a good software is if you don't have that lived experience, if in the lean world that you call it a gemba walk, you have to actually walk in the shoes of the folks that you're trying to build software for. And so, I mean, it's kind of a leading question, but I guess, yeah, like what are some of those things that you took from your experience that you're actually like seeing go into the software? Because I think you mentioned before, like it's so much of your focus is making it easier for the field, if that's correct.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, we wanted to learn and see, like, does everybody else have these problems? Do they have similar problems? Is there one problem that is just like the same across all of them, across all construction companies? So before we even got started, Like, I was like, okay, I'm on a mission. I'm going to go talk to as many contractors as I possibly can and then figure out what that big problem is. I ended up talking to over, and I mean, I had a team too. Like, we had a few people. We were all reaching out to contractors, bringing them in. And we ended up talking to over 200 contractors and understanding what their problems were. And when they told us all their problems, a lot of it came down to, well, we have, not only is it hard to do time tracking, either they were doing some sort of like low-end software that wasn't for construction, just to kind of clock in and clock out. But then there were still some manual processes, or they were writing them down in spreadsheets, or they were using Google Sheets. A lot of it just, we understood that there's no template in construction. Every contractor works totally different, unless they're like related, and then they're like forcing them to do it their way. So it's, we found out that with all these different workflows, different processes, we actually have to overbuild in the beginning. And we have to make it so when they come to us and tell us how they operate, we can configure the app exactly how they want to operate. So if John, Steve, and Barry need to just clock in individually, and then a super or a foreman just need to approve that time, and then it automatically gets to the back office, boom, that's their process. That's one contractor. Then there's another contractor where, oh, we don't want them individually clocking in. We don't want them using their individual phones. We want the foreman clocking them in. And then when the foreman clock them in, we want them to use biometrics. And then we want them to sign off on it. And then when that goes through, we still want the payroll specialist to approve it. And then it can go to payroll. And then, hey, we actually deal with prevailing wage and have certified payroll. So then there's a whole nother complex situation in there where we have to upload the certified payroll reports. And so it's like, wow, there's a lot of different scenarios out there. How can we keep up with that? And that's when we decided, let's tackle every complex contractor's payroll scenario when it goes even from like HR, payroll, onboarding, recruiting, like everything, and certified payroll, union reporting, like everything. And we were like, we want to be that go-to construction workforce management platform that can be configured to their current process today, implementing the applications, but then they can focus on the job. It's so easy where they're taking away the manual processes, the spreadsheets, even like technology that they just kind of settled for. and
that's a huge problem. Nathan, you got a question there.
Well, no, and I think to go down that line, because you mentioned what 200 some odd contractors that you interviewed, and again, any contractor I think experiences those challenges, but how does a general contractor handle that versus how does a trade contractor? There's nuances within it, but I guess were you looking at GC and trade, or were you looking specifically within carpentry trades? What was the scope of those 200 you were looking at?
Great question. I mean, we went after everybody. I wanted to learn from everybody: GC, subcontractors, specialty contractors. I mean, roofing, HVAC, electrical, concrete, painting, like everything, like drywall. We talked to everyone and got all these insights. What we found, and even from like the GC level, getting the hours from all the subs to the GCs so they can get some costing in the back end. Like, can we help out everybody? And the answer was yes. And it was just trying to streamline that data collection, but also making it adoptable. Nobody wants big tech in the field that has to be basic, but then at the same time, it's basic blocking and tackling for your business where the application's doing the work for them. It might seem like it's a lot of technology, but in the end, it's not. So they're clocking in, clocking out, but there's a huge engine. There's a V10 engine behind it, not a V8, not a V6. I mean, we went V10 and we're going fast. And like,
yeah, that's the interesting part about it, Lou, is that we, you know, I used to use this analogy of time all the time. Cause when I got to construction, like I was like, it's time. And then I was like, oh no, it's not time. oh no, this is far more than I ever thought it was going to be. And then as I moved out of masonry and into the world, I realized just even more how difficult it was. And I use this on stage all the time about like, oh, you just think it's capturing time, right? And everybody's like, yeah, it's just time. And I'm like, oh no, it's not. And it's also a waste of time a lot of ways. And there's so much, you know, digital rework. But it's interesting because you had to have some emotion as you were interviewing these 200 contractors, like, whoa, because you felt it. You lived it.
These were
your frustrations.
Yeah. Yeah. And can I selfishly promote that during those conversations, I heard so many cool stories.
Yeah.
From the contractors where they were spotlighting their own companies and they're growing. Cause I told them my experience and they're like, oh, well, we did that too. And this is when we started. We were in 1982, we launched and we got to this point and somebody tried to buy us at this point. So many cool stories where like dads passed it to sons or dads passed it down to daughters. And I heard like so many interesting perspectives where I was like, wow, could this be the genesis of a podcast? And like, it ended up being the birth of the Builder Upper Show where we had actually interviewed. I just kind of let them tell their story. So like, I just wanted to selfishly, sorry, to promote my podcast.
No.
Okay.
Hey, no, we're podcast. No, what is the name of it again?
The Builder Upper Show.
Builder Upper. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the show. I love having people on it. Yeah.
It's an awesome show. Go check it out because it's telling the stories, right? And it's also a path for you guys to continuously learn from the ones that you interview, tell their stories, promote our industry. But then what I want to know is like, so you guys started with this, you know, clock in, clock out, time, payroll. And we all know in this world, like, you know, you have union, you have open shop, you have certified, you have reporting you have to do. So what, but you guys actually didn't stop there. And no. I'm interested in why more? Like to me, almost that's enough, but why more? Why would you guys as a team think there's more to this? And really, what did you tackle and why?
Man, I think when we really, like, I would invite the operations guys into the meetings. Like, come on, like, bring on your general superintendent. Tell me exactly how they want to work. What makes them super impressed with an actual process where they would actually want to implement it? And, like, a lot of them were like, man, we need a really easy scheduled dispatch. It has to, a scheduled dispatch module for, like, the operations guys. They want to be the coach. You know, they want to know what players to put in when and where to help them perform. It's going to make, you know, they can focus on building faster, getting projects done fast. How can they do it in an easy way? So that kind of inspired us to build a little bit more. You know, let's go a little bit further. Let's see how much more we can uncover when we go down that path. And we ended up impressing some operations guys behind the scenes where we're like, hey, let's keep going down this path now. And I'll give you guys a glimpse in the future where lumber's headed towards. So when it comes to compliance and like local state taxes and like figuring out like what numbers need to be where, like, cause we can handle multi-state, multi-wage, multi-rate, everything. And we are utilizing AI behind the scenes. Even with compliance, we're using LLMs. We're featured in TechCrunch as far as like large language models and packing in that information. The more data that we're getting from our current client base, man, they're our PUG group, our power user group. We are gathering enough information to give us some intel on how contractors operate. We're using that information and then we're utilizing AI in the future. And I'll say it now because it's not here, but I'm going to say it now so we can go back and watch this podcast and say, wow, it was actually said on the podcast here. So we are going to have a scheduler that can automatically create the schedule for them, knowing what worker qualifies for what specific job at what specific location and line that up of their based off their availability, putting each worker on that job to where if they need to be changed, let's say they were sick you know, then they need to be replaced. Then the coach, the guy comes in, okay, he's out, this guy's in, drag and drop, maybe pull the hours back a little bit, push them forward, however they need. But that's how simple the future is going to be for scheduling workers and keeping track of everything, helping with budgeting and forecasting. I mean, we are the future of construction tech.
But I love that you ended there and didn't start there, because there are so many startups that are like, we can do that for you at the very end, but they're not doing any of the stuff that you started with, which is that frictionless, the term I use is field to finance, right? Like the whatever yes. that stuff you have to capture that's out in the field, that it could be to your own as a trade contractor's financials. It could be, as you mentioned, the general contractor's financials. There's this kind of digital multiplier effect, but it's ultimately based on reducing the waste of the manual entry, which is where you have to start. But then you went to the next level and you went to, okay, we can actually do plan versus actual analytics and actually start to get trends and analysis that lead to this forecasting and this AI that everyone gets so excited about. But they don't talk about the what data did it start from in the first place. So just kudos. I don't think there's a question behind that. Just thank you for going through that whole step 1, 2, 3 and not just jumping to step 3 as so many tend to do.
I get so excited about it because I've seen the response that we get from the guys in the field. Mm-hmm. Like it's a real, we are not sitting in Silicon Valley building this tech saying here, this is going to work for you. No, not at all. We're literally building this at the actual, like, in the trailers with the workers, figuring it out, whiteboarding it, and figuring out how are we going to be the future. The only way that we're going to be the future is if we are working hand in hand with all these contractors, figuring out what is the future look like for everyone.
I just came up with a good one. So has there been a situation where, or something you can think of where you're continually being told, oh, but we always do it this way, and it is actually the wrong way of doing it, and you have to like figure out how to educate them up to like a better best practice? Yes. I mean, yeah, if there's an example you can share, that would be fantastic.
So, and this is where we're so blessed with the team that we have today. So this is where I'll default to our other founders. So our head of product is absolutely phenomenal. His whole family was in construction. They came over. So as far as like where his mentality is in tackling those situations, and then also with our engineering team, people will come with their problems and we as a team will display those problems kind of behind the scenes and say, all right, let's workshop this. Let's figure this out. So they will come up with solutions. And do we work as a consulting portion? I mean, people could say it's kind of like consulting, giving them some ideas, but we make suggestions. So like we will suggest that they will do it a specific way based off of compliance, laws, regulations, kind of, hey, don't be in this sticky situation over here if you're not doing it this way, because this could happen. So we lay it out in a way that's realistic based off of the current ways. I don't want to throw out any specific scenarios just in case somebody might pick up on it. So
companies, just, you know.
Practices. But yeah, we came across a few business practices that definitely needed suggestions. We offered the suggestions, they implemented, and let's just say they're in a really safer place today.
That's good.
Well, I mean, that's the beauty of it, right? It's consultative sales. I mean, we've all been in it, right? All walked into a place before where it's just like, you don't know what you don't know. They're contractors, right? They build. It's not like you walked in and you were like, oh, you can't, that framing is not, you know, it's not going to hold. Like they already know that. You're saying like, hey, some of these other processes that are secondary are, you know, you need to think about it. We've all been in those spaces, and that's the beauty of having a partner versus a vendor that you're, you know, like, here, take it. And that's what I like too, is that, you know, you've got a mix. If you go through all of your founders, you have a mix of, you know, kind of stalwart, been here before, been down the road a few times. You have construction folks like you guys that know this industry, know how it works, but then product, right? You're customer centric. And this has come up a number of times. I think it was Walker on one of my other podcasts, Walker Lockhart, that said, the customer is always right. We forget that it's the customer is always right in matters of taste. Mm. This is not in matters of compliance. the not in matters of, you know, add your things in there. And that's where being customer centric, but also like they can't tell you what they want if it's never been invented. And it's never been connected. And I think that's what's cool for you guys too, is like, so schedule, dispatch, time, payroll. You went to my favorite place after that. And I want to tease it out because you went to people-centric, HR, onboarding, Benny's. Like, I can't tell you how much I hear about labor shortage. I hear about, you know, problems in our industry. And I go back to, it's blocking and tackling.
Yes.
If I have to, in this day and age, go to a shared drive to find my payroll slip, to find out how much PTO I have, and then fill out a form to request it, you wonder why we don't have people. The rest of us do this right here. It's at our fingertips. It's our experience. And if we don't improve the overall experience, we don't improve the industry. So I'm passionate about this portion, and we really don't have construction focused, construction built services in that area. So talk about that piece and some of the reasons you did it, and you know what your philosophies are for those people.
A lot of the feedback that we got from the field when it came to HR was the recruiting aspect. A lot of these applicants actually came from word of mouth. So we're like, okay, let's figure out an automated way for word of mouth. How can we do that? So there you, okay, here's my app, right? I'm using my application. I go clock out for the day. When I go clock out for the day, HR has the capability of promoting an in-app notification where I can get a referral bonus if I simply push this button and text it to my friend that I know is a good fit for the job. Boom, two button pushes. And that is out there. Word of mouth. I didn't have to pick up the phone. I didn't have to tell anybody. I just pushed two buttons and they know that job is now out there. And that's one employee doing that. Imagine if all the employees were pushing that job out word of mouth, that position's going to be filled within seconds. And that's that whole experience. We know that that's the big piece of bringing in workers. Not a lot of these workers are on LinkedIn. They might go look on Indeed if they're job searching, but if they get a friend that says, hey, I know you're looking for a job, here you go, done. Like they're going to apply. They can apply through the application. Let me even back up a minute. The recruiter itself creating these jobs, we are using AI in that aspect too for creating the job pieces too. All of that's automated. You put in electrician, all of it's filled out for you. Maybe modify a few line items and that's pretty much it. You put in the recruiting side is so fast. And then clicking the promote button with a referral bonus, seconds. All that's done, boom, it's pushed out. Then that person that's interested in applying has it on their phone. Where do they get redirected to? The app. So then they fill out the application. They fill out the, let's say they get hired. They onboard through the app. They get assigned their first day on the job through the app. They know where to go. They pull up the app. They go to that place. They clock in and boom, they're working. They can do all the training through there. Safety is huge. How simplified can you make this the safety training? I know some of it should definitely be in person, but also if you're just, there's a few videos you need to watch. We can do all that. You can track it through the app. It's done. They didn't have to go anywhere else. So the entire, and then of course, benefits administration, filling all that out, making sure benefits are there, 401k setup. We even have it set up where they can automate the fringe benefits, allocating funds for 401k. That 360 experience, nobody else has. And we are like super excited that we're making it specific for construction. Nobody else. And it is special for them. And I think that that's the one piece, like you mentioned, it's exciting. Nobody else is really doing it. And nobody else has that same experience that Lumber has. So I'm really excited for more people to come over and adopt this, this technology and have that feel of what it's actually like to onboard automatically or recruit automatically, and then get them on board, get it done. And it's less time thinking. They can focus on their job, the other stuff, the really important stuff. How are we making money? You know, that's the important piece in construction. Let's keep collecting that revenue. Let's keep building. That's the main focus. And that's why our app is not only powerful, but it's simple. And it does all of that for them.
Well, and this is cool because, like, you guys can already, you know, lose. This is why we brought you on. Like, lose enthusiasm comes across. Like, he's excited. And we need excitement. But because somehow you've brought excitement to, like, one of the least exciting places on the planet, to be honest, man. Like, I love that that you got to, because you have a field like passion for it, right? This passion that you have came from your field lived experience, which that's where passion should come from. And I mean, Nathan, this is all not sexy things, right? No, these are not like, but we just do them wrong so often in our industry. And, you know, like, it's also what holds new companies back.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm going to let Nathan jump in here in a second, but it holds, like, as startup technology companies and all the startup technology companies, there are already providers for this. You know, you just go to Rippling, you just go to, I'm trying to think of some of the others that you just go to.
Well, and that's where I was going to go. Cause I think the last step, and I mean, the only thing less sexy than all this is open integration, right? but the barrier that you hit is, oh, well, that's great, but we already have XYZ, we already have Sage, we already have Procore, we already have, or even payroll, you know, apps and things like that. And it's, as I'm looking at your list of apps you connect with, it sounds like you've definitely, you know, heard that and built those open API integrations. So
I was going to say, you got Acumatica, one of my favorites out there, integrated with them, which, you know, we want to see these true SaaS products grow on these. It's non-sexy, but to bring your enthusiasm, Lou, I'm excited, man. I'm excited to watch you guys go there and really help construction companies get out of the boredom and the doldrum and the things that are holding them back from building and doing business development and getting out there and recruiting and doing those things. So, and bringing new people into the industry, you know, I can't wait till I come across them and they're like, oh no, I did all this right here. And it's all it like, we're like the rest of the world and boom, we've hit it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So thanks for sitting down with us today, Lou. I know you know, truth and transparency on this show, Lou jumped in. We had already met and talked and he jumped in last minute. So he's just going to be with us for this portion. He can't stay with us for the news today. But listen, Lou, tell people where they can go learn more and find out more, because I know we're going to have some excited guests out there or listeners out there that want to connect.
First and foremost, go to lumberfi.com. That's LUMBERFI.com. Throw in a submission, contact us, call us 224-545-2548. You can even text that number if you have any questions or you want to set up a meeting and meet me. Just set up meetings. I want to talk to you. If you're from the industry, let's have a chat. Let's have a coffee. Doesn't matter. I'm in Wisconsin. I'm in the Midwest, so just let me know. And then we're also at events. Come say hi.
If you aren't inspired to go meet him, you are now. And if you're a builder that has a story, you should go talk to him too. Jump on the show. Like, we're big fans of new shows, et cetera. And who knows, maybe you'll see one of us over there at some point, Lou.
Yeah, that would be awesome. The Builder Upper Show, look for it. Subscribe to the podcast. Reach out if you want to be on it. Happy to have you on as a guest.
Back in 2020, I heard about a new software platform called Join. Within minutes of seeing Join, I knew it had the power to revolutionize collaborative project delivery. In fact, I was so sold on Join that I joined the team as its industry evangelist. Many trade shows and podcasts later, Join is now used by 50% of the ENR top 30. Why? Pre-con and ops leaders at DPR, Bolt, McCarthy, Barton Mallow, Clark, and others say that they like Join because it does two big things: collaborative, trackable decision-making, and awesomely simple visuals. Want to learn more about the power of Join? Go to www.join.build/demo to learn about how better gets built. All right, Nathan, we had a great interview. Unfortunately, Lou had to jump because he was our last minute addition. So it's just you and I. We get to pontificate alone today, which is
I don't know how I'm going to keep the energy up. This is it's gonna be tough, but we'll try. We'll
right?
Try.
He brought that energy, so you got a high bar here, buddy.
Well, thank you for passing on constructionowners.com. I was looking through some of the news feed in there and found this one, boosting contractor profits through better coordination on construction sites. So again, this is another new Dodge Construction report revealing that, surprise, surprise, nearly all contractors in the U.S. and Canada, 98%, have encountered significant quality issues, errors, omissions, and rework over the past 3 years. Wow. Yeah, if you ever needed data and proof that we still have issues in construction, there it is. But I think what this really gets down into is around collaboration and kind of the role that collaboration plays. Contractors, again, report here that 33% of their quality issues stem from on-site coordination issues. So not necessarily in BIM, but again, finding that down on site. And one of the ones that we were thought was really interesting here, only 18% of contractors use more than three collaborative strategies. Again, there are a total of six collaboration strategies and kind of that, again, we can talk through here in a second. But it seems like the general trend here is that the majority of folks are trying collaboration, not really going full bore in collaboration, and then wondering why we're not getting our return on investment. Does that sound familiar, Jeff?
It might sound a little bit familiar that we talk about a lot about it, but we don't dig into the weeds. I think what's interesting is, you know, they've called out their own six, which are an interesting group of six, basically all the way from investing in the technology and the tools to the policies and procedures, to the training, to the tracking, and then, you know, performance reviews and a culture, I think, is the last one around supporting employee decisions. What it says is we're just giving it lip service, right? We're again, kind of like we want technology to solve our problems. We want to say we're collaborative and then just have it be the win. And that's not how it works, right? So I say it all the time. Communication is contractual. Collaboration is cultural. Thanks to my boy, DJ Phipps. He actually said it first with coordination. But we realize that coordination is just one part of communication, which I think plays to the article, right?
I'm going to read one line. You perfectly encapsulate. It says, effective collaboration between trade contractors is crucial for minimizing such issues, yet many contractors struggle to implement coordination processes that work. I wonder why. Like, let's do a root cause analysis on why trade contractors struggle to talk to one another. Maybe it's the contracts that we're signing.
Yeah. And the key in there for me too was resolution, conflict resolution, and that 50% of trade contractors feel that most conflicts remain unsolved, which means 50% of the time somebody's carrying a level of risk on making an in the field decision or a last minute, or it just is what it is. And we're not actually getting resolution. And I mean, how many RFIs go unanswered? How much of this goes unanswered that just creates a level of risk and uncertainty that we don't need? I mean, that's just, those are things that we can solve.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Well, enough dwelling. Let's talk, focus on some good news. So listen to a Adam Grant podcast interviewing Astro Teller, who's, if you haven't seen his TED Talk, the founder of Google X and their Moonshot Factory. So he was talking about a company that has now come out, this DAC plant or DAC for direct air capture is removing CO2 from the air. So basically the company is called 280 Earth, and they have proven now this commercial demonstration of a way to essentially, you know, capture CO2 carbon from the air. It's in Oregon. And essentially, as Astro was saying in the podcast, that it's able to produce enough now to offset basically data centers in the entire US. And so as someone who's a big data center builder, and you know how much electricity and how much power and ultimately how many fossil fuels are burned to run those things, like the ability to completely offset that CO2 with this new technology, it's nice to see that there are such advances in at least the kind of the sustainability tech side of the world that we should be celebrating and hopefully see more of these out in the market.
Yeah, I mean, it's an awesome technology. I mean, just to think that we can pull the carbon that's in our air out and redistribute it or lock it up in ways that we can kind of recycle it is what some of this leads to. It's just, you know, like you said, a lot of what we hear about is doom and gloom. And it's, so it's great to hear this. And anybody who's heard me talk early in my career and even consistently now about leadership will hear me talk about, you know, we talk about moonshots and, you know, we think of John F. Kennedy saying we're going to go to the moon. And really it's about what Google X and Astro Teller have taught us is it's a culture. But if you don't know X, the Moonshot Factory, basically their whole goal is 10X impact on the world's most intractable problems. Not a 10% improvement, so not incremental change. This is all about drastic improvement, drastic impact. But it's all about, you know, these huge ideas and aspirations and risk. But they do it with, you know, that startup mentality, that speed. And there's so much to that because we, you know, we need that. And they're honestly, I think in many ways, this is the innovator's dilemma, their own answer to it, right? These companies spin out of it. So it's cool to see another one come out. They're not always successful when they come out, but this is
awesome. That's the whole point. That's X's strategy or Teller's strategy is shooting, or as Jim Collins would say, shooting bullets before cannonballs. That it doesn't have to be a big investment to prove a value and then go from there. And this, again, 280 Earth is a great example of that. And I think the one last part that I thought was really cool is not only are they capturing the CO2, but when they do capture it, it gets liquefied and sequestered, and it's actually very cold. And so you can actually use it for cooling on those said data centers. So it's sort of this whole cyclical effect of it. So I just thought it was very cool innovation that was worth sharing. But what do you got, Jeff?
No, I dig that too, by the way. I mean, one of the things we have seen is an uptick in the water usage of the data centers, especially driven by the usage of AI and the amount of compute power and that, and then heat that generates. So this is another way to offset the innovation that could become very, very costly down the road. So awesome stuff. I'm going to kind of take a little one here. Everybody knows I'm a big Tech Brew fan. This is Emerging Tech Brew. If you guys don't follow them, I highly recommend them. Morning Brew, it's a subset of Morning Brew. If you don't know about Morning Brew, take a look. It's a cool daily newsletter. I get kind of all my news from areas like this. And this is Hype Responsibility. I love this. Why AI washing can get companies in trouble. So the SEC is cracking down on companies with misleading AI claims. So it's what they're calling a new school of fraud. And they are coming down. And so if you are just saying you have AI, to say you have AI, to get that funding or to put dress up your product and you truly don't have it in there, and there is a number of groups out there that are doing it to raise funds. So this is a really, I think it's a really powerful piece that the SEC is looking. And I think this is great for business, right? I've always said, you know, snake oil salespeople need to really learn what they're doing. So kind of what was your thought when you saw this one come out?
Well, I've always wondered, like, when it comes to all these open models, like, what does it really mean to do AI within a software? It's sort of like, oh yeah, like at this certain point in workflow, we access in some sort of open AI or some sort of model. And so like, it's always been fuzzy to me, like at what point are you just plugging in something and not actually doing AI versus actually like manipulating what AI is doing. I'm very much an amateur in that world, so maybe you can school me up.
Well, a couple of these, it's all about how you're articulating what you're actually doing. There are a number of large language models there. And by the way, when we talk about AI, that's another thing, is that it is so much further and so much more than you understand. And if you want to know more about it, you can go back to some of the episodes we've had on it. Where, you know, it's just so much more than just a large language model or natural language processing. You know, there's much more to it, but a lot of these things are now available and they're not proprietary. And if you're just leaning on one that's not proprietary, but you're insinuating that you have some sort of proprietary technology, some sort of proprietary AI that you've built, and that's actually not the case. You're just reusing an open source piece or somebody else's stuff, you can't do that. And it, you know, so there is a lot of exaggerated claims. There's a lot of people that are using the hype and not actually designing their own. That doesn't say you can't say, hey, we're leveraging these AIs to provide you with more value. But if you insinuate to an investor or to, you know, to your shareholders that you've got some sort of unique IP that they now think like, oh, great, I'm going to invest more in that. But then really it's you're using ChatGPT, you're using one of these other open source or readily available for purchase models, you're going to get in trouble. Yep. So I love it because we need a balance to the hype. The hype is in my opinion, we've gone way too far. And we need to slow our roll just a touch.
I think my layman's term analogy as you're explaining that was like the dictionary, and then there's the content that you write from the dictionary, and then there's like plagiarism, right? So it's like you can't like plagiarize the dictionary, but you can definitely plagiarize someone else's content. And so yeah, like if the rules of like how you put it together is your AI, but it might be the same language model underneath. Either using someone else's and saying it's your own or whatever is essentially the same thing as plagiarism.
Yes, there you go. And, you know, we've seen this already in greenwashing and cloud washing. And so these are not new terms when new technologies hit our space. Yeah. So, you know, if you're out there and looking at it, realize that you actually have some protections too. We need more protection in this space. We need more oversight. We've seen, and I'm going to try not to get on this soapbox, but we have seen what big tech can do when it is not regulated and left to their own devices. We have a social media epidemic with our children and in the country, and they are not being held responsible for it. And we need to think about that responsibility, and we got to learn from it. We may not be able to go back on that one, but we can learn not to go forward in AI with this. So great to see him hitting with that really fast and starting to put some policies and procedures in place to help us be clear as consumers and investors. So, and to our investors, right? You deserve this protection.
And on that, quick shout out to Tristan Harris, co-founder of Center for Humane Technology, right? Because he's like leader, you know, ex Facebook, Google, whatever person that's really after, you know, what is responsible AI, what is responsible social media, all these things that like he saw from the inside, how bad it got because we just had capitalist mentalities and didn't realize the psychological effects that it's had on society. So yeah, there's so much to not going away from that conversation, having that tough conversation in all this AI madness.
Yeah, it's great to see the tough conversations. A little preview, we might be bringing somebody on in the construction technology world that's actually thinking very thoughtfully and going slow to go fast. So just a little teaser that might be coming your way soon. I'm going to move on because we know I love leadership. And when I saw yours and, you know, talking about AstroTeller, I came across on LinkedIn, you know, I have my people that I listen to, and Tony Robbins is one of them. You know, always enjoy his articles, always enjoy his thoughts on leadership, his thoughts on the future. And this was just his five things all great leaders do. And I love a good five things. Like it's a great marketing thing, to be honest, to everybody marketing out there, but it's also because it's really consumable, right? If you can have just a couple of things, if you try to boil the ocean, never works, right? Right, Nathan? So this is first, influence over position. We say this all the time. Leadership is not a position that you get. You don't walk in and somebody, you know, puts the sword on both sides of your shoulder. You are now a leader. It is how you use your influence. It is how you take on the responsibility of being there for the people that you are around and quote unquote leading, right? Just because you're the CEO might not be you're the emotional leader. You might just be the tactical. You may have somebody else in your organization that is the leader. Also, your field and you're a trade contractor, you're a pipe fitter, a welder. But you can be a leader by looking at the technology or looking at the process or looking at what you're doing and talking about it and helping other people, reaching across to another trade, reaching across to your own people. So it's influence over position. It's about smarts. It's not about smarts. It's about who executes. I love this. There are lots of great thinkers out there. There are not a ton of great executors. There are not a ton of people who put their effort where their mouth is and really dive in and are willing to roll up their sleeves and take action. I've said this all the time. Some of the greatest leaders and greatest places I've ever been, they jump in and get dirty. Sometimes it's not the best use of your time, but you should be able to do it. And like I've said, anywhere I go, if taking the trash out at night is what's going to move the company forward because we got to roll up our sleeves and get her done, then let's get her done. It's about executing. Study the success of others. Modeling. Find those leaders, including and especially in the trades and in construction, the other people around you that are actually leading, that are getting crews to work together. We talked about collaboration a minute ago. Model after those that are effectively communicating. And then leaders anticipate, losers react. If you are not thinking into the future, if you are not watching for what is coming and you are just reacting, you're not leading, right? You have to be five steps out. Are they always going to be right? No, actually three of them will probably be wrong. And that leads to his next one, leaders fail, right? When people succeed, they party. When people fail, they ponder. Pondering is searching for the ideas, and that's where they're created. You know, good old Adam Grant, rethink. What's something you've rethought? Rethink things, fail. And that's it, man. What do you got? Man, what do you think?
This is deep. It's so much as it seems like it's, oh yeah, that's common sense, but some of these things are really, really hard to do. I mean, the influence over position, I can remember my days in corporate innovation of a regional leader telling me like there's a big difference between the influence you have versus the authority that you have in that position. Because I did not have very much authority, but I had a ton of influence and sort of understand, like I didn't understand the power that I had. And I think that the execute part like is something I absolutely struggle with, not because of the time that it takes, but because committing to an execution means, you know, it's almost like a fear anxiety thing that like you can be smart, but like really the courageous part of being a leader is moving forward with that execution when others are, you know, honestly scared to. I think the looking at others, the first person I wrote down was Brent Darnell of like, man, if I could just figure out how to write posts like he does, how to just conduct myself. And he's, you know, such a model for me among others, you know, that you have to have those people in your life, especially if you're going to do anything that's, you know, against the grain or different than kind of the status quo. And then anticipating versus reacting. The only thing I added to that is anticipating with patience, right? Because I think a lot of us that are very forward thinking can anticipate, but then we get frustrated with how slow things are, especially in our industry. So, you know, no, don't react, but do anticipate and then be patient. You know, it might be a couple years before the industry catches up, and don't let that get you down. So, and that's part of failing is learning that maybe the industry's not ready yet. So that's why we try.
That is part of failing. And anticipation creates rooms for you to ideate too, right? That's the thing is we need leaders to be thinking down the road so that they have time to ideate, time to come up with solutions, time to test things and fail, time to use the labs before the problem is here. It's like the labor shortage, right? We're in many respects waiting to fall off the cliff. And we can't wait to fall off the cliff. Like we have to change now. We have to try things now. So yeah. And that's all I have for this week. And thanks, man, it's kind of fun to just do the news. Just you and I get it done quick and talk about it.
I'm ready to get back to it.
Yeah. Well, I am too. And I'm ready to get it back out there. Maybe you'll see us both on the road out there soon. Thanks to Lou for joining us. Thanks to Nathan for joining us. And thank you for tuning in today to geek out for our interview with Lou Perez. To read all our news stories, learn about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.